Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, you gotta love Miles Davis. Thanks once again for joining us on Queensbury Rules Radio. I'm Patrick Connor for QueensburyRules.com, and also with me, of course, like always, is James Foley of BadLeftHook.com. James?
Hey, Mr. Connor.
How's it going there, buddy?
It's going well. How's your connection?
If you can hear me, then apparently the connection's better than last week.
So far, so good?
Yeah. So far, so good. And for anybody listening and who was, you know, freaking out last week, tearing out their hair and whatnot because I kept dropping, if that happens again, I'll probably just hang up, call back. So if there's dead air for a moment, just hang tight. We'll be back. Anyway.
If it happens, I might just panic and just hang up myself too.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you will.
If
and by the way, for anybody listening, James Foley did not watch the Fox card last night. Just don't ask, okay? Don't let's not go there.
Sorry, man. I was watching amateur fights from New Zealand.
I know you were. Yeah, you were watching the 1960 Olympics. I remember that, yeah.
Exactly.
Man, I feel like it's almost like we can't get a break where there's nothing to talk about. There's all sorts of shit to discuss this week, again. All sorts of boxing. I love it.
Schedule's been solid. There's something going every weekend.
Yeah, it's kind of nice. And, you know,
every Monday night for those who can't get enough on the weekends.
That's right. Those people who want to see the top 45 to top 72-ish ranked, you know, junior featherweights fighting on television, that's perfect card for you. So,
well, at
Mikey
least
Garcia.
You know what? At least we got a good one coming up with Antonio Tarver.
Oh yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Possibly the biggest fight on network TV since I don't know. We're the historian, but I'm thinking like early '80s.
Oh, I was going to go back to like Marciano, but okay, I'll go early '80s.
Yeah,
that's
probably
cool.
The old Friday Night Fights series.
Yeah,
it's reminiscent of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You just replaced Don Dunphy with, what's his name? I don't even remember that fuckhead's name. But what is his name? Who am I thinking?
Don Dunphy did most of them.
No, the commentator guy on that guy who did that one Fox Sports card and then was since banished into...
Castle Chalice?
Castle Chalice, yeah.
Nowhere to be seen.
I haven't seen him since
then. No, not at all. I haven't heard, you know, I follow him on Twitter. He's one of my best friends on Twitter.
He's probably in negotiations with HBO to take over Lampley's position.
They keep that stuff hush-hush. So, yeah you can't really talk about that. So, speaking of HBO, dude, Mikey Garcia, is he more monster than man?
I don't know. He's obviously a very good fighter. But, you know, it continues that we still haven't seen him in that marquee fight against somebody somewhat on his own level. You know, and that's kind of the one drawback. I mean, he looks amazing. You know, and obviously it wasn't a flawless victory because he got knocked down in the first round or second round. And he took he got caught with a punch, put him on the canvas, and he got hit a few times too from Rocky Martinez. But, you know, overall, great win. I mean, he came back, he got into his rhythm and got the knockout. But, you know, Rocky Martinez is a tough fighter, probably one of the best super featherweights, but he's not a great, you know, elite talent. So it's still hard to say, but I mean everything looks great. I mean all the signs look good, and I think you know the big fight I would look forward to. I'm still clinging to that hope that Gamboa can turn something out of his career. You know, if Gamboa and Mikey fought, I'm sure 90% of the people would favor Mikey. That's saying something. I mean, even though Gamboa is inexperienced, I mean, not inexperienced, but recently hasn't fought much and, has kind of been floundering for the last couple of years, he's still more accomplished professionally than Garcia is, and Garcia's moving up in weight now. Well, I guess they were both featherweights. But, I think most people wouldn't see that as being close, and I don't think most people would actually see anyone in that weight area, being a favorite against Garcia. So, he's obviously highly regarded, very talented, and, it's getting to the point where I'd like to see him fight a real someone on his level. I just struggle to wonder who that might be.
I do kind of wonder, and I do think he does look really good, but I wonder if maybe he's getting a little bit too big for his britches, as they say. And I mean, he looks technically very sound. He throws a lot of jabs, which I like a lot. He throws a really nice jab, and he can throw like a really hurtful jab too. And I like those things. I like that, he stays fairly busy in terms of, his output. He seems to take a pretty good shot, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, I mean, I think that there's definitely been a bit of a ceiling on the opponents that we've seen him in against. And so, I would kind of just like to see, somebody a bit more capable of really cracking him one or something like that and against him. Because, Rocky Martinez, while that was a nice shot that he landed, and, we were talking last week, I got cut off right as I was saying it. But I remember, actually, it was one of the first times I got cut off last week. I was saying that, we can't overlook a guy like that because he keeps finding ways to win. He's gangly, he's spindly, he's... not particularly impressive, not super technically sound, but he finds ways to win. And, he found a way to knock Mikey Garcia down, as it was in the middle of throwing. After that, he didn't look too great, but,
I think right before you got cut off, too, you were going to say that you had predicted that Rocky Martinez was going to drop Mikey in the first round for the last 2 years.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and fucking Blog Talk, they stole my glory once again, So, it's tough to see him make a real solid prediction against somebody who's tops at maybe 130 or 135, because who knows where he's going to wind up. But it sounds like the expectation is that he's going to kind of just keep moving through weight classes.
Yeah, I mean, he might be tops at 130, at least as far as the kind of American pool of fighters that are usually seen on HBO. And then, you got guys like Danair just got to 126, Rigondeaux at 122, but that's probably not really, it's probably more realistic to look up for a big fight for him. So maybe you start looking at Gamboa or Terrence Crawford if he can develop. There's nothing. I mean, I agree with everything you said. I think that he's a great technician. He obviously has power. He also seems like he just is very poised and patient, and he doesn't seem like the kind of fighter who panics. And, this was the first time we've seen him. He got hit a little bit against Salido, I guess, and that kind of was an unsatisfying ending. But this was kind of the first, real trouble we've seen him in, getting knocked down. And the way that he came back, again, the guy has so much composure. He's just a very solid fighter with some special talent in terms of his power. But like you said, I think there hasn't been a really, high quality level of opponent yet. I mean, Salido kind of made his bones off of beating Juanma twice. I mean, Salido's a tough dude and a good fighter, definitely. I mean, look what he did to Orlando Cruz. But Garcia certainly is on a level above that, and then Juanma was just kind of a shell. Rocky Martinez, solid guy, a title holder, but nothing great, nothing elite. And that's the thing. What will he do? That's why I think the Gamboa fight is interesting. because at least Gamboa has that swagger that, he doesn't think, he won't go in there thinking that he's, Mikey Garcia's opponent. And he does have some skills that could potentially, disrupt Garcia in terms of, I don't think he's been in with anybody with that kind of hand speed and a guy with that kind of power. And somebody pretty accomplished as well. It's just that Gamboa is a huge question mark because he looked like crap his last couple fights and he's just been off the bat for a while. And, you know, the way that he tends to get knocked down a lot against somebody who can punch like Garcia, you know, I think that, you know, Garcia would be a favorite there. But I still think that's probably the most interesting match on the landscape if Gamboa can somehow, you know, rehabilitate himself and maybe have one good showing before it happens.
Well, there's a handful of guys at 130 that are from Japan that I think that, you know, if they weren't from Japan or, you know, and it's not to say that because they're Japanese, but more geographically, that a lot of guys who fight out of Asia seem fairly content to stay there and fight there for the most part, probably because there aren't very many opportunities for smaller fighters here in the States that pay much better than over there. But there are a few guys there that, for example, Uchiyama, that I'd like to see Garcia in against at some point. But otherwise, you have the division, at least stateside, isn't real. It's not real thick. So, I mean, there are a couple guys that he might wind up, you know, facing sooner or later, like a Diego Magdaleno or something like that would be kind of cool, although obviously that's not very likely. But I don't know. Fortuna, maybe. I don't know. He was Golden Boy. Yeah, I mean, it starts getting kind of thin here.
And what the hell is Fortuna doing these days anyway?
I haven't even seen that guy.
Didn't he have some weird, like, split draw where they had two guys had it, like, 10-0 both ways or something like that on ESPN last time?
He hasn't looked quite as impressive as he did against the lower-tier opposition, needless to say. But, yeah, I don't know what he's been up to. And
yeah, he's kind of like a poor man's Gamboa.
Yeah, basically.
In terms of just looking
kind of
awesome,
like,
for a minute and then having a couple sluggish performances and everybody writes you off.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll see, one
guy and then looking shitty the next time out or looking questionable the next time out.
Well, both guys are good too, you know. I mean, I guess, you know, Gary Russell's at featherweight, although he's with Golden Boy, so that probably won't be happening.
Yeah, and see, here we reach one of the few times when we're sitting here going, well, shit. Maybe this Cold War thing, or whatever you want to call it, really does kind of suck, because here's a fighter in Mikey Garcia that, you know, the options are very clearly limited. So otherwise, it hasn't been playing out that way, and we've been getting fights that we want and good matches, and the action's been good over the last few months. Can't complain about that, but going forward, you know, the stables are going to run out sooner or later. They have to.
Well, they'll have to get some stuff done, and it's going to have to be bargaining, you know, putting the bigger name fighter, making some concessions and maybe going, you know, working across the aisle again. I mean, I think it'll happen when it's convenient for both sides and they can both get something out of it, you know, but,
I don't want to, like, open up that whole can of worms again, but, you know, it still kind of, like, surprises me just from a business standpoint that anybody at either network, either Showtime or HBO, would come out and publicly say that they wouldn't work with one of the sport's two largest promoters, no matter who it was.
I thought that was weird.
Even now still kind of surprises me that they would do that. You know what I mean? Like, it's like saying, I don't know, I can't even think of a comparison off the top of my head, but, you know, it's just cutting out a good chunk of potential business, which seems ridiculous to me, but...
Well, I think somebody at
anyway.
HBO was obviously not too pleased about, you know, them taking Mayweather to Showtime or whatever, because that's kind of when it all happened, you know, and then pretty quickly it was like HBO, we're not going to have any Golden Boy fighters on anymore, which is kind of unfortunate, but I guess for boxing fans, the way that Showtime's just made it the Golden Boy Network and they're actually putting on good fights, so we can't really complain about the way it's played out so far. But, you know, I think with Mikey, I was just going to say that he's kind of in no man's land right now at 130 between, I mean, Rocky Martinez, this might be as good as it gets, you know, but it's like HBO's developing those guys at 35 with Crawford. They've shown Gamboa. Juan Diaz is coming back, so he'll be there. And then obviously the guys low beneath that with Daenerys and Rigondeaux and those guys. And, you know, I just think Mikey's more likely to probably gravitate upward. He seems like a solid enough, you know, big enough guy to do that. And you'd probably, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think there's still a lot of questions about how good Terrence Crawford is, but you definitely would favor Garcia over Diaz or Gamboa, you know, for the reasons I said before. Even though I'd watch both of those fights.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, aside from the whole opponent issue or the promoter issue, in terms of how Mikey Garcia is progressing as a fighter, do you think that's satisfactory? You know, do you think that there seems to be any deficiencies here or there that he really needs to work on? I mean, he was knocked down early on, but it was, you know, it was a quick knockdown. He didn't seem very hurt. He was up pretty quick and seemed totally clear-headed, but still, does that point to something else for you?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I guess anytime you get knocked down, it's not really a good thing. But, you know, look at Rigondeaux got knocked down against Daenerys. Everybody seems to forget about that. You know, it's where we talk about how he schooled him and it was so, you know, such a one-sided blowout and Daenerys, you know, was terrible. Well, Rigondeaux hit the canvas. Now, that was maybe a bit, you know, less of a direct hit than what put Mikey down. But, you know, it happens, I guess. But, no, I don't think you can say he's, like, regressed at all. I mean, he's had the opponents in front of him. I think Martinez was a step up from, you know, what was left of Lopez that he fought in his last fight. And Martinez has been in with bigger guys. And, you know, it happened so early. I mean, I think things like that, never try to read too much into, like, a knockdown situation like that. But especially when it happens in, you know, was it the first round or the second round? Was it right at the end of the first round?
No, I believe it was in the second round, wasn't it?
All right, maybe you're right. But a lot of those early kind of knockdowns like that, I don't know. I don't read too much into it, especially because he came back and he didn't seem like he was hurt or anything.
Yeah, and I also should say, Rocky Martinez, that guy's a pretty tough bastard. I mean, he was taking some serious shots in the last round and a half, two rounds. And on top of that, I mean, to land that punch that he landed, you know, that was basically his biggest moment in the fight. He had some success jabbing with Mikey Garcia here and there, but, you know, that was clearly his biggest moment in the fight, and to land that punch, he kind of had to just, like, bite down, take a shot, and land one. And he did that. So, you know, I got to give him credit because he did, at least momentarily, what he should have done. It wasn't a pitch knock. He didn't have that type of quality.
He was hanging in there with him for a few rounds. Garcia just eventually started to find the target. He's obviously a big puncher, you know, even though Martinez was showing a lot of, like, machismo and waving him on and trying to, you know, act like he wasn't getting hurt. I mean, you know, you can't take so much of that. But
yeah, and the precision,
definitely give him credit, you know.
Yeah, and his precision is also impressive, you know.
Oh yeah.
Kind of like we were talking about Golovkin. You know, I think that Mikey Garcia should probably be up there with Golovkin in terms of perhaps not like concussive power, at least that we've seen, and especially if he continues to go up weight classes, but at least in terms of just the punch placement and the selection is excellent, and it's a real pleasure to watch a guy who has an offense like that.
Yeah, he looks really. I mean, he looks really good as a fighter. There's no question about that. It's just now I think going forward, it's, you know, where do we find, you know, interesting kind of challenging opponents and what's out there for him to kind of make, you know, make his legacy.
Yeah, and, well, okay, so if you had to put one name to, you know, who you'd like to see him in against next, you wanted to see him in against Gamboa then?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, you know, from a promotional standpoint, if I was, like, Top Rank, I would probably build that up a bit more, maybe give Garcia one fight at lightweight and, you know, have put them both on the same card type of deal. But since I don't give a shit about that stuff, like, yeah, I would watch it next. I don't know where he's going to go next. I mean, I guess you can find guys at 130 that for him to fight, but that's what would really interest me. Or, you know, I guess if Daenerys had looked better, you know, if Daenerys avenged against Rigondeaux, if they rematch at 126, maybe down the road, I know they have the same trainer, but, you know, someday a Daenerys Garcia, if their weights were similar, something I'd be interested in. But yeah, it just sucks because the fights I'd like to really would like to see Garcia in against guys like Gamboa and or Terrence Crawford. I don't, you know, I don't think there's any way those are going to happen next. But yeah, if I had to just make one fight, if I was in charge, I guess I'd go with that one with Gamboa. See where he's at, you know.
Yeah, I don't think I would mind that fight one bit. I mean, in terms of the, you know, like you said, from a promotional standpoint, it's a fight that could be made. I mean, you know, since Bob Arum and Fitty Center, you know, best friends, besties,
very
and whatnot.
Closely aligned.
Oh, yeah, they're real close, man. I mean, they're probably going to start their own, you know, clique, as they
say.
Well,
50 rides a Segway now in Arum's mansion.
Oh, that's true. And then Arum's going to start ghostwriting for Fitty. He was an attorney, you know.
He's a very smart man.
He is true.
Harvard graduate.
Oh, man, yeah. I'm not going to drop that same joke that I dropped, like, 2 months ago, and it got, like, total silence. Yeah, no, I'm not going to do it.
Oh, yeah. I remember that, yeah.
I'm trying to, like,
misinterpreted
drop a quote,
as being
hoping,
anti-Semitic. Is that the joke that you're
talking
about?
Yeah, hoping that somebody would be like, oh, yeah, he said that one time, and everybody was like, a fucking tumbleweed rolled through my house. It was horrible. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. You
That's,
just
well,
stopped
you
getting
kinda
hate mail for that one, so maybe.
Yeah, no shit. Well, not only did you bring up a segue, but you actually provided me with an actual segue, because you mentioned Donaire, too. Nonito Donaire, where the hell is he going to go from here, man? He didn't really look super great on Saturday night. I mean, he got the job done, obviously. Finished the fight. Wound up stopping Victor Chinian in, I think it was 9 rounds. And, yeah, I mean, it before that was not a super impressive performance. What did you think?
Well, the fight was better than I expected, and obviously more competitive. You know, I thought there were some exciting exchanges there. I thought Darchinian really, you know, came out to win. From my perspective, I heard a couple people kind of saying that they thought that Darchinian looked sluggish, but I thought he was doing a great job in the early rounds and pressing the action and really troubling Donaire and making Donaire seem like he was making him kind of like second guess himself, and which is tough, you know, coming off a loss, a huge loss like he had to Rigondeau. You know, that was exactly what Darchinian needed to do. But, coming away from it, I mean, Donaire obviously didn't meet the expectations that we had because, you know, he kind of got sucked into a pretty competitive fight. I mean, the judges had Darchinian winning. But I do think that, at the end of the day, I mean, he was the more powerful puncher, and he caught Darchinian with enough to really hurt him and to end the fight. He also was willing to exchange with him throughout the fight. Even at times when Darchinian seemed like he was getting better of it, Donaire was right there punching back. You know, eventually, I guess the power showed. It's not the kind of like spectacular. He didn't just blow him away in a round or two, like maybe, you know, would have been the best thing for his kind of image going forward. But, you know, I don't read too much into what happened in this fight going forward. I mean, everybody was kind of saying, like, oh, he would get killed by Rigondeau in the rematch now. You know, he looks like shit. I mean, Donaire's done. His heart's not in it. You know, he should retire. I don't know. Maybe I'm missing something, but I don't take any of that away from it. I mean, I think he got the job done, and I think Rigondeau is a totally different fight than Darchinian. I think we probably underestimated Darchinian a bit and just figured, hey, knocked him out 15 pounds ago. He's so much bigger. Darchinian's lost a couple fights in a row, or, you know, 4 fights in the last couple years. It's just history's going to repeat itself, only sooner. And that's not what happened. But I still believe that Donaire can be competitive against Rigondeau in a rematch. If he comes in 100%. And I hope, you know, I was encouraged that he mentioned it to Kellerman, and he seemed kind of annoyed, and it sounds like he wants to do it. So, you know, I hope that that happens next year.
I think that needless to say, there are a whole bunch of factors. You know, it's easy to kind of, like, simplify it and say, it's because he has no heart for it anymore, or he has no desire, or you can boil it down to a sentence or something like that if you want, but there are a whole lot of things in play. Number one, he's coming off of a kind of embarrassing loss to a guy that basically just totally outdid him. You know, he suffered a knockdown to Rigondeaux, that is, but at the same time, for the most part, he dominated Nonito Donaire, who was supposed to be a very upper echelon, pound for pound, or whatever you want to call it, type of guy. And so he's coming off of that loss, and I can't imagine that that didn't affect his confidence in some way. You know, I know that he's gone through some personal stuff, like with training and managerial, like team issues, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So on top of that, he's in against a guy who has a tricky style and is probably underrated, really. I mean, Vic D'Artagnan, yeah, he got blown out by Nonito Donaire last time, but, you know, if you look at him in other fights, he's been spotty lately, but he just has a really awkward, weird style. He can punch, and, you know, he's really tricky. He knows a lot of tricks, and he demonstrated that, you know, right when he started landing those left hands. Yeah. It looked, you know, kind of like Donaire was like, it was in the, I believe, the second or third round, and all of a sudden Nonito was like, oh, okay, you're going to start landing those left hands, well, then I'm going to move this way, or something like that. You know, he kind of seemed like he was going to figure it out fairly quickly. And then out of nowhere, it was like D'Artagnan was kind of varying up the way that he was throwing the punch. He was kind of like going to the body, faking to the body, and then throwing it up top, you know, just different little tricks that was totally, you know, catching Nonito off guard. And so, you know, put all of these things together, and I think that they combined for a kind of a crappy performance. But at the end of the day, his ledger is going to read that he stopped Vic D'Artagnan in 9 rounds. You know, he stopped him in, I think it was 5 rounds in the first fight and 9 rounds in the second fight.
And it's also going to show that D'Artagnan, you know, was ahead on the cards through the 8 rounds, and in 50 years some kid is going to be on BoxRec and be like, D'Artagnan was winning that fight, moron.
Yeah, that's gonna be my grandson, I'm sure. And
my uncle, my great-grandpa.
Yeah. It's people are going to be dissecting that shit on BoxRec.com when they have microchips in their head in 50 years. But
well, I also think D'Artagnan really got up for this fight. You know, I think in his mind it was personal.
Yes.
Just hearing him talk, yeah. I mean, I think that he really...
That's another factor, yeah.
And you can't discount that, you know, when he's fighting against guys who are, you know, he doesn't have some personal grudge against, like he got blown out by Moreno. I mean, Moreno's a better boxer, better fighter, but, you know, I think that here, D'Artagnan was really focused and really had a good strategy and knew how to hit Donaire. Just in the end, it just wasn't enough.
Yeah, he wasn't quite doing enough damage, wasn't quite quick enough. You know, he came very close.
He won some rounds.
Like, he needed a round and a half more. If he would have been able to stay on his feet and get through the fight, he would have won the rematch, which would have been pretty huge for him, but couldn't do it.
Well, I think Donaire also kind of struggled with his whole like identity as a fighter since he became so reliant on his power and getting those spectacular knockouts of like Fernando Montiel and everyone that he fought since then, you know, when he fought Matabula, I mean, it was just like when he fought Vasquez, you know, it's like at times he was just, he didn't have any real game plan other, he knew that he could kind of outbox and toy with those guys. And so, but he was just kind of waiting back, trying to land the one huge punch. And he wasn't, like, really effectively scoring and winning rounds, you know, like, the way that he could be doing. And I think that a lot of these – and look at what – like, with Narvaez, you know, when Donaire kind of believes that every opponent will kind of come at him and open up and he'll be able to land that huge left hook, and then when it doesn't happen, he can still win the fights and win the rounds, you know. But I don't know if he's really, like – I just feel like mentally and with the way that Rigondeaux fought him, it was like the perfect strategy for somebody with Donaire's problem, which I think Donaire's problem is that he's not just boxing and relaxing and letting it happen naturally, which is the way that he scored those spectacular knockouts in the first place. You know, he's kind of like looking for it. And I think that he kind of fell in love with it. And we all did, because those were amazing knockouts. Even the knockdown against Matabula, when he caught him with that huge left hook and put him down, it looked like he was going to knock him out in the early rounds. You know, the guy's got a huge punch, but it kind of has to happen, like, organically. And the way, you know, and that's why, like, I think Rigondeaux really, I hope that that fight with Rigondeaux, you know, told Nonito something about what he needs to do to adjust to kind of get back to his winning ways. Because I'm not writing him off at all. I think he has an incredible amount of talent, you know, and I think he deserved that regard as being one of the best fighters pound for pound. I mean, not an accomplishment. He wasn't up there with guys like Marquez and obviously Floyd and Manny, but, you know, in talent, he was in there. And, you know, I think that this fight, it's hard to judge because he's already fought Darchinian. You know, he's not going to go back and, like, really – and plus he just had a kid, and like you said, he had all these other stuff. It's not like he's going to go in, you know, into the, like, you know, war room and be drawing up game plans and all this stuff and really focus on what he needs to do for this particular fight because he'd already fought Darchinian. He knew what to expect. He knew he could knock him out. And I think there's a good chance that that was kind of his mentality showing up. But I hope that, you know, if that Rigondeaux rematch happens, he really does – you know, make some effort to kind of improve from his first performance because Rigondeaux did kind of expose him in a way. He just exposed the fact that, you know, he was able to outbox a guy who was just kind of chilling back looking to land a monster punch.
Yeah, and even before the fight, I think it was a sound bite or like a little video clip they're playing before the fight where Nonito himself said, yeah, I kind of fell in love with my power a little bit because, you know, I mean, holy fucking shit, dude, that shot that he landed on Montiel, it dented his face.
It was crazy.
You know, I mean, that was absolutely insane. So, yeah, I would probably fall in love with my own power, too, if I did that to somebody.
I would be jacking it about my power every single day.
Yeah, I would have stacks of used Kleenex around me at all times over my power. But
I'd be doing I'd be like in the Broner sex tape video, and I'd have a tri screen of myself knocking people out while I was.
Yeah, I'd be taking Instagram selfies of myself. So it would be like a meta picture of jerking it over my power.
All right. So we understand why Nonito felt the way that he did.
But. Yes, we do, and so I think that you hit it absolutely directly on the head, though. You know, when he scores those type of knockdowns and knockouts, it's generally when a fighter is coming to him, yeah, but it's also been when he, you know, he just punches so seamlessly sometimes, and his counters are so quick when he's able to actually kind of focus, sit down, and get them off. You know, like a guy comes at him and misses a right hand, and then he counters with a left hook that's just so quick they don't see it. And that's when he gets those types of, you know, knockdowns and knockouts. But you're right. He was really looking for it, and he looked confused in a few points to me against Darchinian. Like he didn't quite know how to approach a guy that was, you know, not following the script, as it were. So I think going forward, that's kind of a concern with Nonito that, you know, I would be worried if I were in that corner and my fighter was either telling me or fighting like he was saying, come on, tell me what to do at all times because I don't know what to do if this guy doesn't do what I want him to do. So, and he's looked like that in previous fights as well. But, yeah, the answer is he needs to get back in with Rigondeaux sooner rather than later and, you know, see where that goes.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, he's had so many advantages over every single person that he's fought in terms of speed and hand speed and power and being a better boxer. And Rigondeaux was the one guy who he didn't have an advantage in every category. You know, Rigondeaux showed that he's one of the best boxers in the world. And that, you know, that was really, like, revelatory, I think, about Daenerys. Now, I'm not in that camp that thinks that was, like, the most one-sided, embarrassing blowout that I've ever seen. I mean, I thought Rigondeaux easily won the fight, possibly in the area of like 8, 9, you know, maybe 10, even 10 rounds. But I did think that some of those rounds were close. And that's why I look at a rematch, and I don't see that Daenerys is going to just get completely undressed again. Because I do think that he can win that fight with just a few adjustments and just being a little bit better in some of those rounds. You know, I don't think it was the kind of thing where Rigondeaux was outlanding him like 3-1 every round and complete, you know, it was just a complete, he should have been embarrassed to be in the same ring with the guy. You know, I just think that he met a guy who had a perfect game plan to beat him and had the skill to execute it. And it doesn't mean that the rematch has to play out in the same way, because Dinair really is blessed with a lot of tools that other fighters don't have.
Yeah, and he's – yeah, it's kind of – I've been kind of hard on him in the past, and, you know, I've talked a little bit of shit or whatever, but in reality, he is a very good fighter. He has terrific hand speed. When he's really focused, he has really good footwork, et cetera, et cetera. I could go on about all this stuff. But, yeah, I think that especially because Rigondeaux is, you know, he's not exactly young himself. So especially with a style like his where he's really really reliant on reflexes and really reliant on speed and whatnot, a style like that could get old fairly quick. So, you know, I don't think that's the type of fight that's totally unwinnable for Nonito. I think that that's a direction he needs to go in. But to me, it just kind of, it seems like he's not really in a rush to get back in with him. I don't blame him, but...
Well, yeah, he said he wanted it after the fight. But I don't know,
with a little bit of prodding, yeah. It took a little bit of prodding to get it. But I get the sense that he's just not really keen on it.
Well, I think he should be. I mean, I just think he needs that fight to reestablish himself as kind of the best fighter in that division, that weight class. And I know that's kind of like a high stakes, you know, gambit for him to take. But and the other thing is, like with Mikey Garcia, I mean, what else is there at 126 behind, you know, if he doesn't rematch Rigondeaux, I mean, what does he do? Fight Wanma? You know, drag him out again. I mean, fight Salido, Salido Lomachenko, but fight the winner of that. I mean, all right, maybe now we're starting to get kind of interesting, but, you know, that still is, Dinair and Rigondeaux is still the best fight in that weight area. You know, it doesn't matter that the first fight wasn't like, oh, that's scintillating, you know, it wasn't must-see TV, but it was, but those are the two best fighters from 122 to 126. And I think Nonito needs to at least try to avenge that if he wants to kind of, you know, maintain the label of being a great fighter or a would-be great fighter.
A lot of people forget that that was fairly highly anticipated as far as, you know, fights between, you know, junior featherweights go. You know, that was... A lot of people were rightfully looking at that and like, all right, well, now here's two very highly skilled guys who are sharp punchers, and this could get interesting. It wind up being a little bit different than a lot of people expected, but still, you know, I think that, you know, especially coming off, looking past all of the pre-fight expectations for Nonito Donaire versus Vic D'Artagnan too. Looking past all of those expectations and looking just at the fight itself, basically what happened was Nonito wobbled Vic early, got a little gun-shy, and then scored a huge come-from-behind stoppage. I mean, put aside all of the, you know, yeah, he looked kind of, you know, he's for pound for pound, you know, put aside all that shit, and it's like, you know, it was a fairly entertaining, explosive win for the guy, and he finished with, you know, looking like a fighter. You know, of course, all of these things in reality do factor in, but
I mean, anytime anytime you got the W with the TKO next to it, you did pretty well.
Definitely. So anyway, the only reason I say that is just because, like, you know, I feel like not you specifically or necessarily me or anything, but it's just like, you know, it's tough to remember sometimes that the dude got the win, you know,
well,
he got the win,
know,
and just kind of settle on that for a second.
Well, we're all cynical fuckers. I mean, like, look, if he just blew him away and knocked him out in two rounds, we wouldn't be saying like, man, Dinair looked awesome. We would be saying, you know, D'Artagnan was so small, so much smaller, and he's old. He's like 50 years old, and he's, you know, his best days were like 15 pounds lighter. I mean, you know, there was no point in this fight. It was just a waste of time. You know, I mean, so Dinair was in a no-win situation, and it would have really been bad if he lost the fight.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You know, I was just happy that it was entertaining.
Yeah.
Because I wouldn't have been entertained had Dinair just blown him away.
Yeah, and I didn't really expect that because I have been paying attention. I mean, I used to really dislike Nick Darchinian for, a number of years just because I thought that he came off as such a douchebag. You know, I don't know. I just didn't really like him. And then a handful of years back, I wound up seeing him. Who was it against? What was his name? Jose Victor Burgos. When he stopped him late, I was at the Home Depot Center there and watching that live, and then he kind of seemed to be acting like a douchebag then when Burgos was, you know, laying on the mat and hurt and wound up seriously hurt. And so I didn't like him for a long time, but then he kind of grew on me because he's a really good fighter. And so in the last few years, he's kind of looked, you know, sometimes okay and sometimes not okay. And he's, I think, 37, which is for a flyweight range type of guy, old. So I wasn't expecting a whole lot. I expected that Nonito was going to come in and get a huge win that everybody was looking for him to get. And that would have been great for him, I guess. But at the same time, I mean, like you said, he got the TKO, he got the W. And on top of that, he got it in a way that was like, kind of entertaining.
Like you said, though, it's like, it's one of those fights. It's like Mikey Garcia against Juan Manuel Lopez. You know, has Mikey gotten anything out of the fight? No. Well, we don't really, like, regard him higher because of what he did to Lopez. But had something crazy happened and Lopez knocked him out or something like that, then, you know. So just when you match these guys with fighters who are huge underdogs and, you know, older guys, and in this case had already fought once and been knocked out before, it does kind of put the A side. It's not really, like, a big, you know, great proposition for them.
Yeah, and like you said, it is kind of no win. And in that sense, I do kind of feel bad for Nonito because it seems that in the public opinion, in the court of public opinion, he can't really get a break. You know, he was in against a guy like Nishioka, who is a top-flight boxer, really, and, you know, was also Nishioka was trying to not really engage a ton himself. And then, you know, he just got booed right out of the fucking arena. It was kind of sad, and I was like, well, I'm not a huge fan of Nonito or anything, but damn.
Right, and he racked up
good
wins.
We are cynical assholes.
Some people even had him, you know, Fighter of the Year last year, which I disagreed with. But I think for the most part in the, you know, kind of collective consciousness, he hasn't done anything really since beating Montiel that was as good as that. You know, he hasn't fought the type of fighters or the type of fight. You know, now had he beaten Rigondo, I mean, that would have been it. So give him credit for taking the chance there, I guess. But fights like this, it's like he really had not, you know. And the reaction I've seen has been pretty negative about his performance against Darchinian.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, we've been going on about it for a couple minutes, but yeah, it's probably deserved in a few ways because we just expect more from somebody of that caliber. But yeah, like I said, looking at the fight, it was fun. It was an entertaining fight, much more entertaining than I thought it was going to be. So I'll take it for what it is, and I'll kind of, like, you know, just hope that they can put a Rigondo versus Nonito rematch on, because that's the fight that probably should happen. Although I think I was reading on Bad Left Hook, I think it was yesterday, that it seemed that Bob Arum doesn't sound like he wants that fight all that much. And I don't really blame him there.
Oh, man. All right, sounds like Danair Lopez next summer.
Hell yeah. Yeah, whatever. I mean,
well, it's too bad because
even
if he didn't fight Rigondo, again, the Cold War bullshit, you know, him against the winner of Gonzalez-Marez rematch, that's cool, you know? I mean, there's some other stuff. I mean, I don't know. That's about it, I guess, as far as mega fights go.
Yeah, there aren't too many, you know, real huge fights or anything like that on the horizon for him. But, yeah, I mean, I don't really blame Bob on one hand because Rigondo already kind of rubbed a bit of a luster off of Donaire in that first fight, and he was kind of pissy about it because they've invested money into Nonito. You know, they've put him on a lot of independent pay-per-view type of things and, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
So,
well, they wanted him to be the next Pacquiao crossover Filipino star, but you know, that's the whole thing. I think the only way he regains that luster is against Rigondo.
Yep, exactly. That's pretty the only way to go. Well, shit.
Speaking of Armenians, though, how about, wasn't your boy Vanis Martirosyan on the undercard?
Oh, dude, that guy's my boy. We're super close.
You guys go back.
But, yep. We go to brunch every Sunday in Glendale. Not really.
Biggest Armenian population outside of Yerevan.
Yeah, I think that I heard that on HBO. I think that somebody said that on HBO.
Oh, shit, that's where I got it, too.
Oh, fuck. Yeah, it was, I don't know.
That's the kind of shit I want Roy to be dropping. You know, like, can't Lampley just pass Roy a note and he could just pull out that line about the biggest Armenian population? I mean, that would...
I mean,
that
as much as I
me.
Love
and Roy... Dan, I would say, this man has done his homework.
As much as I love Roy, I don't know that his, you know, syntactical
capable
capabilities
of pronouncing half
match
the words
that.
In that sentence.
Yeah, it's. I'm not entirely sure that that would go down that way. But, yeah,
like
he
speaks
he
four
it.
Languages, English, Spanish, Cuban, Irish.
that was solid stuff there. I was like, oh, Jesus.
Classic Roy.
Yeah, very classic Roy.
I fucking love him, man. I just want to have just his laugh as my, like, cell phone ring.
Yeah, I like the laugh that he does when somebody says something, and you can tell that he's laughing like, this motherfucker. Like, they have no clue what the fuck they're talking about. Yeah, it's...
Hey, he's,
Jesus,
he's,
dude.
He's the man.
Yeah, he is a gem. Well, I wasn't nearly as bothered by the fight as a lot of people seem to be. I kind of like Demetrius Andre, though. Well, yeah. Well, like you said, we're cynical fucks. We complain about everything. And so I just saw a lot of complaining that it was boring. And, I mean, I didn't really think it was that boring. I thought that it was, you know, it was fine. It wasn't super exciting or high-paced, but it was fine as far as, you know, entertainment values go.
Yeah. I think so. I mean, it was better than Martirosyan and Lara.
Yes, it definitely was. But so now, have we kind of clearly established? I mean, I think we still have kind of a bit to learn about Demetrius Andrade. They pronounced it about four different ways on the broadcast. But I think that we still have some stuff to learn about him at a higher level in terms of, you know, what he's going to do from here on out. But I think it's kind of firmly established that Vanis Martirosyan is, like, just going to kind of come into fights and walk around, you know? I mean, he might score, like, a knockdown here and there.
He's probably not going to live up to whatever potential that he might have had a couple years ago when he was undefeated. And Ring Magazine inexplicably had him ranked as, like, the number two junior middleweight before he ever really did anything. But, yeah, I mean, you know, with Andrade, I think that obviously, you know, he got caught in the exchange in the first round and got dropped just like Garcia, but which is, I guess, a little bit troubling. I mean, it would have been better if he had just kind of cleanly, you know, shut him out or beaten him. But actually, didn't they have a split decision? I thought Andrade won, you know, 8 or 9 rounds.
Yeah, that's why I was asking also, because I was trying to tend to my daughter kind of as I was watching. So right after the fight, like after it ended, I was kind of just like, well, you know, all right, well, I'm pretty sure they're going to score it for Andrade, famous last words and shit. And I was just like, I don't know. I looked back and I checked Twitter and somebody was going, split decision. What? Split decision? And I was like, huh? Split decision?
What?
What do you mean? That? Yeah.
They pull that shit sometimes. Well, every time.
Well, they're... yeah.
I mean, there's so
Texas
many fights
too.
Recently where it's just so predictable. It's like, all right, it's obvious this guy won, but it's clearly going to be a split decision because that's just how they roll.
Yeah, it's just like the ultimate way of like hedging in terms of fight scoring. You know, like let's give this guy the win, but make it look like there was some type of fucking nuance to it or some shit. It's, come on. I don't know. I saw a handful of people on Twitter, for what that's worth, scoring rounds for Vanis, you know, all over the place, like I said, for whatever that's worth. But yeah,
very
I thought
little.
That Andrade should have won a good 8 or 9 rounds. I think that would have been pretty fair. In any event, a decisive win.
I've liked Andrade, you know, a couple of times I've seen him. Actually, on your favorite series, Friday Night Fights. And
favorite,
you know,
ever.
Yeah, he seems like a talented fighter. I think this was a really good win for him. You know, it moves him ahead. Actually, it was for a belt, too. Not that that matters that much, but, you know, it signifies that maybe he could get some interest from,
whatever,
you know, some higher-profile opponents.
For sure.
But, you know, I'm not like, kind of got dude who watches fights like a boxing trainer, you know, and is, like, analyzing mid-fight. Like, man, it looks like he's slapping with his shots and, you know, his footwork's bad and that kind of shit. But I guess it does trouble me a bit that they were mentioning on the broadcast that they thought that he was opening up his thumb and slapping with some of his punches, because he was connecting some you know, good stuff on Martirosyan that looked quick, but it wasn't really hurting him. And maybe that explains, you know, that maybe he was slapping a little bit. But so that, I guess that's, you know, not a great thing for him to be doing, especially if he would move up and fight, you know, more capable opponents. But now he's fought, you know, two guys with Martirosyan, and then who was the dude he fought? Did he fight Freddy Hernandez?
Freddy Hernandez, yeah.
Yeah, who also fought Erzlan Lara.
Yeah.
And I think in the comparison, in terms of how he did against those guys and how Lara did, I think it's relatively close. I mean, Hernandez and Lara, that was a horrible, ugly fight that was just sloppy as hell, and Lara didn't really, you know, definitively stamp that one the way that he has some other ones. Like, I thought Lara was coming on against Martirosyan and clearly deserved to win that, even though it was a draw. But, you know, Andrade against Hernandez just shut him out. It was a really, you know, good-looking performance. And then here against Martirosyan, you know, he basically won the majority of the rounds. Martirosyan was maybe a little more competitive in hitting him more than he was against Lara, but that fight with Lara was just bad. I mean, neither guy did a lot, you know, until the last couple rounds. So I think Andrade, you know, is a measuring stick. I think he looks good, and I look forward to seeing him again.
Well, I mean, what kind of worries me for him is that he seems kind of vulnerable as he's punching, and on top of that, when he gets hit stiff, he doesn't really look like he likes it a whole lot. I mean, who really likes to get hit? I know, but he kind of looks as if it, like, kind of just for a second, you know, makes him freeze up when he gets hit. And I think that's also kind of what contributed to that knockdown. He recovered from it fine, and he kind of, you know, he did the right thing, and he started scooting away and then holding in close where he needed to. But, yeah, I mean, I do wonder what's going to happen when he's in against somebody who's not really intimidated by speed, or, you know, intimidated by a guy that's able to counter quickly and then just nails him. So I do kind of wonder,
I can,
you know,
see that,
what exactly is going to happen.
And I only brought up that slapping because, like, I think it would have been better. I mean, the way that he was hitting Venus with those combinations, obviously it would have been a lot better for Andrade's stock and for our impression of him if he had been able to actually hurt him and stop him. You know, but Martirosyan maybe just pretty tough. I mean, I don't think he's obviously not been knocked out before. He'd been down that one fight against Joe Green, I remember that. But maybe, you know, Martirosyan's a tough dude. It's just that if you're catching a guy with that quantity of shots and combinations the way that Andrade was in that maybe like eighth or ninth round, you know, when he really kind of took over, and you're not remotely hurting the dude, that's a little bit of a troubling sign for me as far as Andrade's power, because he had scored some, like, pretty, you know, I remember this one just like kind of sickening KO where he put a guy out cold and the guy was like stretchered off, but that was obviously against much lower level of competition.
Yeah.
So it doesn't bode great for Andrade's power, and also, like you said, his defense and, you know, the fact that he was put down like that. And he did look a little bit vulnerable, but he also kind of has that frame, that, like, you know, big frame that I think sometimes makes guys look a little clunky. For, you know, junior middleweight, he's pretty tall and skinny.
Well, in a Facebook group that I frequent, somebody had posted a link to a video of Andrade doing mitt work. And, I mean, that's one of my least favorite things to watch.
And it looks like he's just doing playing patty cake with somebody?
Yeah, it's one of my least favorite things to watch fighters do, because it's damn near worthless. I mean, I know I'm not a fighter and everything, but, if you just sit there and watch it, these fucking trainers are just sitting there moving their hands with the fighter, and that's literally what they're doing, is just slap, 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 slap. Okay, great. Do that on a speed bag, whatever. Anyway, that's what it looked like, is he was kind of like just moving his hands, and like, yeah, his hands look quick, and that's great and all, but it's just kind of like this mindless, like, here, look how fast my hands are type of thing to me. And when guys kind of start falling in love with doing that type of thing, for me, it just worries me that they're kind of starting to mistake that for skill. They're starting to mistake the kind of like innate speed or genetics for, you know, actual in-ring know-how. And so, dude, that does kind of worry me for them.
You're telling me you've never popped a chubby to Floyd and Uncle Roger doing mitt work, that part when Floyd like ducks and Roger swoops over, you know, swipes over his head?
And the entire gym goes, woo!
Yeah.
I've popped a couple chubbies to that, but, you know, I try not to.
But I agree, most fighters' mitt works are worthless. But that one I try to watch daily.
Yeah, it just doesn't really make a lot of sense to me to get all impressed by it, but whatever.
It looks cool occasionally, though.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, it is impressive when a guy like Floyd Mayweather is able to, you know, do the stuff that he does. And, you know, I'm sure that with a guy like him, with his skill and at his level, you know, I'm sure that some of that is actually, you know, kind of organic or whatever. But it almost seems like a learned dance routine or something half the time. Like,
yeah,
you know, they learned this shit beforehand and they're just going over the numbers. But anyway, I mean, as far as where Vonis Martirosyan goes, I've already seen him since Saturday talking about, okay, hey, Mr. Promoter, Mr. Whoever guy, you know, I'll fight so-and-so, let's fight, let's do blah, blah, blah. And I'm just kind of thinking, like, are we going to have to brave this shit again?
Well, I mean, we don't have to. We could always just, you know, turn off his Twitter account, block him.
Yes, let's start a petition.
Yeah, the way that he's fought against these guys, and I think, honestly, you know, with Lara and Andre, they're just better boxers than him, better fighters than him. But the fact that, you know, he was so kind of hesitant and tentative. I mean, I thought he was doing well early and then doing well in spots against Andrade. But he had to know that he was down big going to the last couple rounds. And he wasn't really going after it. And he needed to win this fight to stay relevant, I think.
Well, they were telling him that in the corner, too. They were saying, you need to go out there and you need to, you know, take the fight to him and win the fight.
Yeah.
And he was kind of just like, He looked in his corner like he was kind of just like, okay, yeah, that's cool. All right, I'll try that. Okay. Well, fuck.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know, man. He's probably, you know, I doubt we'll see him on the HBO airwaves or on that level again. But I'm sure that they will probably use him as some kind of building stick for the next guy if he keeps fighting.
Yeah, well, hell, a handful of years ago, or a couple of years ago, I thought that he pretty clearly lost to Kasim Uma, who even at the time looked kind of spent. So, I don't know. I was saying that I didn't really think super highly of him in the first place, but whatever. The card itself, like the HBO card, you know, were you pretty satisfied?
Yeah, I mean, I enjoy the festivities like I usually do. I guess I was satisfied. I mean, I had low expectations for it. And, you know, I thought I really enjoyed the first couple rounds of Andrade Martirosyan. When, you know, I thought the first round was really good. Andrade dominating it and then gets caught with a big punch, some drama going on. Once that kind of settled in, you know, it was good. It was watchable. It wasn't anything special. And then, like we said, I mean, both of the two kind of bigger, higher profile events had, you know, the Darchinian Daenerys was competitive, and you know, Mikey getting dropped gave that fight some drama early on. So as a whole, yeah, it was a decent card, but I mean, I'm looking forward to bigger and better things coming up.
But did you like the fight or the card on the whole?
No. No,
oh.
Yeah. Well, what do you mean did I like it? Yeah, like, I mean, I wasn't like fucking like, you know, I mean, I wasn't, like, upset when it was over that I felt like I'd, you know, wasted 2 hours of my life. I mean, I was satisfied seeing it. I mean, I like those guys. You know, I like Daenerys. I like Mikey. I'm interested in seeing how they progress in their careers. Obviously, right now, they're kind of heading different directions. You know, Mikey's skyrocketing and everyone's, you know, loving him. But, and Daenerys gotten kind of, you know, middling reviews. But yeah, I was satisfied with it.
Yeah, I thought it was solid. I mean, I definitely wasn't fist pumping at any point or anything like that, but I thought that it was pretty decent because, like you said, I didn't really have super high expectations for it. I thought that, you know, on paper, the most competitive fight was probably Andrade, Martirosyan, and that probably wound up being, like, I don't know, I guess maybe the least competitive fight from that standpoint. Well, I don't know, I guess it kind of depends on how you look at it. But in any event, even though, you know, Mikey Garcia, for the most part, outclassed Rocky Martinez, and Demetrius Andrade probably took 8 or 9 rounds of 12 against Vanes Martirosyan, I thought that those fights were still reasonably entertaining and, you know, pretty watchable. So, yeah, I dug it. That was pretty good, and especially considering that it's like back-to-back-to-back-to-back-to-back, you know, on HBO.
Exactly. I mean,
I got to like that.
Yeah,
well, there is
something like that every Saturday. I'm not going to complain about it. You know, if it was like the first boxing card in a month, then I was, you know, really, you know, looking forward to it. But who would have been with that, those lineups? It wasn't great. I mean, yeah, we have to admit, and a lot of this is just kind of the way that their fighters are positioned right now and kind of what they're moving towards and all that. But Golden Boy, you know, especially from that, like, 140 to 154, they've just had so many kind of intriguing matchups that they're making. You know, and shit that doesn't even seem that good, like Malinaji Judah, but still is probably, you know, a better, more watchable fight than anything that was, you know, this past weekend.
For sure. But, you know,
and so I think Showtime's had stronger overall kind of cards lately.
Well, there is something to be said for, like, you know, watching a card like this and not being, you know, not being overwhelmed with how great it was, but then saying, ah, well, you know, it wasn't great, but it'll hold me over till next week when Andre Ward fights Edwin Rodriguez. Oh, fuck, dude, that totally didn't work at all. Never mind. Because nobody wants to see Andre Ward, because everybody hates Andre Ward. Okay.
That motherfucker.
Yeah, that fucking son of a bitch. That all-terrain warrior son of a bitch.
People, it's funny, man. You know, everything's like hyperbole. So, yeah, according to some, I mean, Andre Ward, like, literally doesn't even throw a punch during his fights. He just basically just walks out, puts his opponent in a headlock, you know, gropes him a little bit, grinds on him, you know, smacks him a couple times,
yeah,
and then just gets these ugly decisions.
Mind bullets. Yeah.
Well, but whatever. He's a great fighter. He's a great fighter, but you just don't like his style.
But he's good though.
Yeah,
I guess. Now, I mean, whatever. I've not been a big champion of Andre Ward. Period. I give him respect for the things that he's done, and in some fights I quite enjoy him. Like, for example, against Chad Dawson, I was like, all right, now this is an Andre Ward that I can sit here and watch. But there have been other fights.
I could watch Chad Dawson getting knocked down a few times. All right, I'm into it.
Well, there have been other fights where I'm like, dude, not this again. You know, I don't want to see this grinding, fouling shit. But regardless, you know, I have been kind of eager to see what will happen when he gets back in action, because he is one of the world's top fighters. Whether you like his style or not, look at his wins. He's definitely one of the world's top fighters. So I have been eager to see what was going to happen when he got back in the ring. And like I was saying last week, I didn't really think much of Edwin Rodriguez. It wasn't that I didn't think much of Edwin Rodriguez. It's that I didn't think that he had the level of experience necessary that Andre Ward, Edwin Rodriguez made sense as a fight. And I'm still kind of skeptical about that, you know, kind of going back and doing my research. I think Edwin Rodriguez does have some things that you know, he can punch. He has reasonably quick hands, and he looks very strong. And so there are some things that he might be able to do in there. What do you think coming up about this fight coming up?
Kind of have the same take as you. You know, I would have heavily favored Ward prior to seeing Rodriguez knock out Grachev. I'm kind of dubious because, you know, I hate to bank so much on one fight and you never know exactly what was going on. But in my mind, Grachev was a pretty, you know, not a great fighter, but a pretty sturdy, solid guy. He fought Boutte and he fought, you know, he knocked out Ismael Seelock. That was kind of how, you know, his rise to prominence. And Rodriguez just destroyed him. So, I mean, that was impressive as hell. Prior to that, he did have a couple fights, you know, like you remember when he fought Will Rosinski? And he got, like, a shutout. He got three shutout cards, and everyone thought it was, like, could have been a draw, or Rosinski might have even won. He fought Donovan George. He beat him pretty easily, but didn't look great. I mean, you compare it to a guy like Adonis Stevenson against George. So I think, ultimately, Ward is probably on another level than Rodriguez. And, is you know, I mean, I certainly favor him to win the fight. I think it's just a question of how competitive can Rodriguez be. Aside from the weird kind of fluky Chad Dawson thing, Ward's never really been a big power puncher against, you know, world-class competition. So I don't think Ward's going to knock Rodriguez out. I think Rodriguez will be hanging around and have a chance, but I do kind of fear that Ward's style, his experience, and, you know, he's just racking up a really good list of opponents. So he's been in there with guys, I think, better than Rodriguez and won those fights pretty handily. So I guess, you know, the X factor is kind of Ward's been out of the ring for a while. He's coming off an injury. And, you know, Rodriguez has never lost as a pro. So I guess any time a guy's undefeated, you know, there's you're going to see something new. Well, both guys are undefeated here. But Rodriguez has never lost. So he's going to have to go through something, you know, some new kind of experience if Ward's beating him. And then we'll see maybe what he's really, you know, what he really has inside. Does he have enough to change the fight? I don't know. I mean, it's always safer to be a skeptic in these situations. And I think when you look at the resumes and you look at what they've done against the type of opposition, you know, you gotta favor Ward. But Rodriguez is coming off a really nice win.
Yeah, and actually, Denis Grachev trains here in San Diego, or at least he was. I haven't really seen or heard much from him since
no one has seen him
since
he's been knocked, since he was knocked out by Rodriguez.
No,
Rodriguez retired him, for Christ's sake.
That's true. The rumor is that he's living over near a fucking, in a van by the river over near the fucking San Diego Bay. It's horrible. We need to start a petition. But he trains here with Manny Melchor, who is, of course, a fairly famous lower weight fighter from maybe about 12 years ago or so. And yeah, I mean, Denis Grachev gave Lucien Boutte hell for a few rounds there. You know, and he's a real real kind of just ballsy type that I thought was going to give Rodriguez a serious test. I mean, I was looking forward to that fight, and then it was just like, boom, over. Holy shit. I didn't expect that at all. So, there, you know, on top of that.
I don't think we knew that Rodriguez had that kind of power.
No, I didn't. I didn't expect that at all. And on top of that, Grachev's pretty tough. You know, I'd never really seen him get I didn't really see him get banged around like that before. And
I think Boutte and Seelock both can punch. It's just, I don't know. I mean, it was the post-Frock Boutte, though.
Yeah, that's true. And, well, I think that Lucien Boutte probably isn't the sturdiest guy in general. But moving, you know, along with Edwin Rodriguez, even if he is to lose to Andre Ward in dominating fashion or whatever, you know, I think that's probably what a number of people expect. And number two, losing to Andre Ward isn't necessarily a knock on a guy's resume. You know what I mean? Like, it's not going to kill his career by any means. But
not at all.
It does just kind of make me worry slightly that he's not ready for it. I guess we'll see. But I was surprised by that Grachev win. Yeah, I was very surprised.
It's a big jump. It's a big jump for Rodriguez in terms of, you know, class, yeah, definitely, compared to the guys that he's been fighting. But like you said, it's kind of a no-lose situation. I mean, he has a lot to gain, and I don't think many people are going to write him off. I mean, unless if Ward completely, you know, lands every punch in the fight and knocks him out or something, then people will probably say, okay, Rodriguez is, like, you know, not really even top 10 level. But I don't see that happening. And maybe it could be a good experience for him and, you know, make him a better fighter in the future. But, you know, look, I don't think Frock's lost anything from losing to Ward. You know, and Kessler still, I mean, those guys were established in Europe, but, you know, in terms of even just general perception, I mean, most people would rather watch them fight than Ward fight. So I think it's just, if he gives a good effort and you know, and he, but he also has so much to gain. I mean, if he can do something shocking and knock out a guy who's been, you know, and in my mind, unfairly, but who has been villainized by a lot of people, you know, I mean, that's going to win. Rodriguez is going to just be like, you know, the man of the hour.
Well, all right, so I have a question about where the fight's going to be taking place. I mean, to me, I'm kind of confused as to whether or not Andre Ward is, you know, really thought of as much of an earner or a superstar or whatever you want to call it. Because, I mean, he is kind of making a comeback, I guess you could say. Yes, he's coming off some injuries. He's also coming off a huge win, and he's still undefeated. But it just kind of, I guess, just kind of confuses me that he's going to be fighting at the Citizen Bank Arena, which is in Ontario, not super far from me, maybe about two hours from me. But it just seems kind of like a really random place for, you know, a guy who's probably at worst the third best fighter in the world to be fighting. You know, so my question is, what is really going on as far as how he's being marketed? Or, I mean, what do you think it is that's preventing him from being a bigger star?
I just don't think he's fought the kind of opponent that would really generate, like, mainstream recognition. You know, if he gets it, it's probably going to be like a Bernard Hopkins kind of thing, where he just gradually becomes recognized and becomes a name. I don't think he's going to become a Floyd Mayweather type superstar. You know, I just don't think that's possible. He doesn't have that kind of opponent that he can piggyback on, and he doesn't have the kind of personality that captivates people. You know, so I don't think it even has much to do with style. I mean, he could be, you know, he could, you know, even if he was an exciting knockout puncher, he'd be a little bit more popular, but not necessarily that much. I mean, he just hasn't been fighting at a real high profile, you know, level in terms of, like, wide, you know, mainstream recognition, like ESPN and things like that. He'll be regarded as one of the best fighters in the world, but becoming like a superstar for him, yeah, I just don't know if that's in the cards. You know, I think he would need somebody who's like already an established kind of pay-per-view star. He'd have to go in there and beat them in a fight. And even then, I don't know. Maybe a Hopkins level is possible, where he's like a solid B-side and you know, or well-regarded by everyone. But I don't know if he's ever really an A-side pay-per-view star.
Yeah, it certainly doesn't seem like he's, you know, headed in that direction. Needless to say, but I mean, he comes off to me, and I've said it before, he comes off to me like a douchebag. I know that, yeah, it's basically only what we're, well, it's basically only what we're being shown. I mean, it's kind of difficult to really judge a person's character when they're on television. But
if we're talking about, like, who's a better role model for your kids, Floyd Mayweather or Andre Ward, I mean, I'll go with Ward. But if we're talking about, like, who would I rather watch just talking on TV, I'm going to go with Floyd.
Yeah. So, I mean, going off of that, I have difficulty relating to the guy. I have difficulty, you know, hearing him speak and just thinking, oh, you know, that was insightful. I kind of hear him speak and go like, that guy just sounds like a dick. So, I mean, at least for me, I understand why I don't really like him, and I'm not super high on his style either, but it just seems to me like, you know, he could be a much bigger star than he is, and I don't know exactly what it is that's holding him back. You know, he's got the amateur pedigree. He's a really good fighter. He has a reasonable amount of power. It's not like he's a totally feather-fisted guy. You know, I think that, you know, perhaps his inactivity has also been a part of it, because in the last few years he's been fighting, you know, pretty infrequently.
Well, see, I just don't think he's really had the platform yet, and I'm not sure if he will ever get that. You know, I mean, the Super 6 tournament on Showtime does like half the ratings that, you know, the typical HBO shows were doing. I mean, now Showtime has kind of gotten a little bit more, you know, they're getting bigger names and they're doing better ratings with guys like Cotto. Oh, I guess Cotto was just on HBO, but, you know, they've done better since Golden Boy's taken over at Showtime, but I don't think the Super 6 was, like, really, outside of boxing, considered a very big thing. So as he moved up and got those great wins and became regarded, he didn't have an opportunity to get that kind of popularity that, you know, some of these, even the younger guy like Danny Garcia, I think has had a much better platform to become well-known than Andre Ward has. You know, I mean, the Chad Dawson fight, it did good ratings. I mean, there was some word of mouth from, like, boxing people to getting casuals to watch it. And I've actually heard Bill Simmons, who's kind of a good barometer of kind of casual sports fan, who's somewhat into boxing. He was on some podcast, and they were talking about boxing. And it was funny because, like, neither guy really knew much. I think it was Adam Carolla. So they're both, not entirely sure what they're talking about outside of the top couple guys.
Yeah.
But at one point, Simmons actually asked him, like, who's this guy, Andre Ward, isn't he good? So people, I guess, somewhat, you know who he is and know that he's one of the, you know, considered one of the best fighters. But I don't see the opportunity to become, like, crossover superstar. You know, right now there's all that money is at 147 and is with Floyd and with Manny. And that's the exposure. Those are the, like, water cooler events that get casual fans watching boxing. And I don't know if Ward's going to ever have a chance for that. I mean, maybe. You know, hey, if Ward-Golovkin happened, I mean, every boxing fan is going to tell all their friends, like, this is a big fight, check it out, even if you've never heard of these guys. You know, there's things that will improve him in it. I mean, all he can really do is just keep winning. And eventually he'll get the recognition. But, you know, does he have, like, a Felix Trinidad, like Bernard Hopkins did, that's going to make him into something bigger? I don't know. I don't see. For a little while, I thought maybe Chavez Jr. was a guy, but, you know, you want to rely on Chavez Jr. for anything?
You mean Chavez Jr., the heavyweight?
Exactly, yeah. The 10th-ranked heavyweight by the IBF?
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, assuming he does keep winning, assuming that he takes probably a decision or something like that on Saturday, you know, where should he go next? Where will he go next? Where do you, James Tiberius Foley, want him to go next?
Well, look, dude, just one more follow-up to that. Like, here's Andre Ward's ceiling in terms of popularity is some dude on a podcast being like, hey, isn't Andre Ward, like, a really good fighter? But where do I want to see him go next is I think there's great fights for him at 175. I think somewhere, you know, maybe something with Golovkin happens. I mean, I would love to see that. But I think the natural fight, especially if Ward's going to just chill and not be active and fight like once a year, I think he should come back. I think he should come in at 175 and fight whoever emerges from the Stevenson-Kovalev rubble.
Yeah. For sure. I think
that's what I'd love to see. I mean, if he rematched Carl Frock, that's fine with me too. I think Frock's done enough to deserve it.
It's difficult for me to really jump on his ass for, you know, not going up in weight. You know, I mean, I'm kind of from the school of thought that, you know, I really respect the fact that Bernard Hopkins was able to stay in middle weight for as long as he was and basically totally clean out the division, you know, and I'm not going to, like, look back on that era of his career and say, like, oh, that's shit because he didn't move up in weight. You know, I mean, it's just the type of thing that it's like, if a guy moves up in weight, great. If he doesn't, then fucking oh well. You know, then dominate the division that you're in, which is what Andre Ward has done. However, once you're at that point and there really, you know, there doesn't seem to be any clear challenges to you or there's nothing available or whatever the case may be, move up, dude. You know, move up and create something then. You know, because Andre Ward sure as hell isn't going to be going to 160. So do something.
Yeah, if he beats,
you know,
Rodriguez, he's basically
happen.
Beaten like half the ranked guys at 168 already, including his number, you know, top contender, which would be Carl Froch. So you're right. I mean, in terms of really proving, you know, aspiring for greatness and continuing to be that guy, I think those are the answers.
Yeah. It's, you know, he needs to figure something out anyway, because whether or not he's going to go on and be a superstar, which, you know, he probably never really will be, but whether he will be or not, you know, if something's not happening, you need to create something. You need to make something happen. And, you know, whether that winds up being, you know, fighting somebody in the meantime while Golovkin can get some wins and go up to 168 or something, then great. But, yeah, I mean, I guess we'll have to see after this weekend. I don't know. But also, hey, on the undercard, Sergio Mora's fighting, dude. I know you're pretty excited about that.
Really?
One. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Dude, I thought everybody knew that.
I thought I would, because I follow the guy on Twitter. I'm a big fan of him on Twitter. Bigger than, actually, than in the ring. But
yeah, I thought that you were going to be, well, weren't you going to be changing your Twitter name to the Latin Snake Charmer?
Yeah, I'm still considering it.
Yeah, I knew you were.
He's the Latin Snake, with two E's.
Well, yeah, because,
maybe,
you know,
the
there's
Latin
only
snake
one.
Was taken.
Yeah. Yeah, it probably was, you know, by some dude living over here in, like, Chula Vista or something like that. That's
yeah.
All right.
Who's now trying to sell it to Sergio Mora?
Yeah, for $72 and a 40. Yeah,
I didn't know
he's
that.
Fighting.
He's been, you know, he's been kind of banging the drum to try to get a Golovkin fight.
Yeah, I'm not at all interested. Sorry, Sergio.
I'd look at it.
Hey, he fights his way into it. Great. If not,
I mean, is he less qualified than Stevens?
Even if he does. Yeah, well, that's a good point. But
Golovkin's the kind of dude I actually wouldn't mind seeing somebody try to stink him out. You know, because as painful as it was to watch, like, Donaire and Narvaez, Golovkin is not Donaire.
That's true. No,
so
that is true.
Think
and then
I mean, I think it could be an exciting kind of cat and mouse, and I think that Golovkin actually likely could solve that kind of a style.
Oh, yeah, I think he could. Well, you also have to remember that, you
there's
know,
better
Sergio
stuff.
Mora, well, yes. Well, number one, Sergio Mora's style, this isn't very eye-pleasing, you know, period. You know, he's got fans or whatever, I'm sure, but it's not the most, you know, entertaining of styles. But he's also, you know, he goes to the ropes a lot and tries to, like, fight off the ropes and kind of, it seems like he thinks he's got a little more Floyd Mayweather in him than he really has. And I think that that's right about where Golovkin would probably crack the shit out of him. But, you know, they want to make that fight, fine. But I'm not super into that fight.
No, it's not.
Stop fucking around, Foley. Fuck.
Nothing to be too excited about.
Well, actually, on Saturday, I think it's Saturday, like, afternoon. I'd have to check the time because I'm not really sure. But I think it's Saturday afternoon. Tomas Adamek is going to be fighting Vyacheslav Glaskov. Heavyweight fight.
I saw that, yeah.
What, do you even want to get in some discussion on this shit?
I don't know. I mean, I'll check it out. It could be decent. I don't know a lot about Glaskov. I saw his fights on NBC Sports. You know, that was when Tor Hammer basically, like, quit in the middle of the fight, right? And then
yeah,
his
and,
fight against Malik Scott, which I think Scott should have won, and ended up being a draw.
And what a waste, because Tor Hammer has, like, one of the coolest names on the face of the planet. That guy should just be a lot better than he really is.
Thankfully, we'll never have to see him again. Oh, wait, he's on the opening for the Pacquiao Rios pay-per-view.
Boom.
What the fuck? I think with the styles here with him and Adamek, I mean, I've fought Adamek. I've been saying for 2 years, Patrick, that I think Adamek has done. But actually, I don't know how long I've been saying it, but basically ever since the Vitaly Klitschko fight, because he's just looked a lot. He's looked slower, and he's looked like a guy who took a horrible beating, and his reflexes and his, you know, speed and all that are just aren't the same. And he's a small heavyweight. You know, he's been in some rough fights with some kind of journeyman type guys in this comeback. Now Glasgow, I don't really think is, you know, any kind of a world beater, but I think this could be a good fight. You know, and I look, Adamic's crowd pleasing as hell. His style's great. He fought Eddie Chambers too, like about a year ago, didn't he? And that was that weird fight where it was like a split. Originally, they said it was a draw, and then they said it was and then Adamic won a split decision. Most people thought Chambers won.
Yeah,
that happened, right? Or was that Steve Cunningham? I'm getting all fucking mixed up here.
Oh, excuse me, sorry.
That was Steve Cunningham, I think.
Excuse me,
but
Jesus.
No problem. Regardless, man.
One you're talking about was the Steve Cunningham fight. Yeah,
right,
that was like last, like November or December or something like that, and he's been kind inactive since.
But he did fight Chambers too, right? And that was where Chambers like broke one of his hands and basically, like, in my opinion, outboxed him one-handed the entire fight.
Yeah, and then still lost the unanimous decision. Yeah, that was like, that was, I think, earlier in the year.
So those have both been
post
Klitschko.
And,
I just don't think Adamic has a whole lot left. And I actually could see Glasgow giving him a good fight, if not beating him.
You know, when I said this, when it happened, I remember watching Tomas Adamic versus Michael Grant on a stream, because I don't remember what channel was showing it or whatever, but it was televised somewhere, but I wasn't available here, and so I was watching it on a stream, and so I remember watching that fight, and then there was like two rounds late in the fight where Michael Grant, and I'm like, yeah, that Michael Grant wound up hurting Adamic pretty badly. Like, not to the point where it was like the fight was almost stopped, but he wobbled him really good. And I was thinking, like, really? Michael Grant, though? And it was just kind of like, you know, going into the Klitschko fight, I was like, oh, man, this is going to be horrible, and he's going to get
the fight with Klitschko was just, it was bad.
I felt bad for the guy because he tried his ass off, and he did everything he could, but he was not big enough, not strong enough, nothing.
It's so much hard, but, like, man, he was just taking a fucking pounding in there, and that was just uncomfortable. But it wasn't competitive for 1 second.
No, you know, not even a moment.
And I forget who it was, but he came his first comeback fight after that fight. He basically got dragged into this kind of brawl with a guy who was clearly meant to be kind of a bounce back, like journeyman type, you know, to get Adamic back on track. And when I saw that, I was kind of like, he's done. You know, he's just not the same. And he probably never really was going to be able to, compete against the Klitschkos. They're just so much bigger, and he's not a very big heavyweight. But, you know, actually, those two kind of controversial fights against Chambers and Cunningham, he probably looked better than he did in some of these other comeback fights against, you know, worse competition. But point is, in my opinion, he should probably have at least, you know, two losses, and he's struggled with some guys who he should have handily beaten. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I understand he's a popular fighter, and they'll keep, you know, riding him out on the East Coast with the big Polish populations, and, you know, that's cool.
Well, I mean, these days, if a guy is going to be going to heavyweight from cruiserweight or light heavyweight or whatever, you basically, you know, at least until the Klitschkos are gone, you're going to be have to be looking at two things. You know, either you really just you want the heavyweight money, which at this point is kind of questionable. Unless you're overseas or in your some regional territory where, you know, you're fighting a guy that's really popular somewhere, or you think that you can take on a Klitschko, you know.
I think he wants to fight Vladimir Klitschko.
Yeah, and I mean, realistically, there just aren't very many cruiserweight, light heavyweight type of guys that are going to be able to do that. You know, there just aren't. So.
No.
At this point,
there's
I guess
only
what
one.
I'm trying to say.
There's only one,
well,
Patrick.
What I'm trying to say.
He wears pink undies and swims
buddy.
In, floats on a swimming pool.
Yeah, he does. He eats cereal in his Mantis at 3 a.m. when he just woke up or whatever it was. I don't know. Jesus
How much
Christ.
Would you pay for the Deontay Wilder Chavez Jr. pay-per-view?
Everything I own, which
yeah,
is just this podcast. Yeah, that would be pretty
I'd throw
awesome.
In $10 on top of the podcast.
Damn. We're getting serious now. All right, I'll buy the beer.
That's a good fight, dude. Great puncher, great chin. You know, comparable size. Seems like a good fight.
Imagine Chavez Jr. making the psycho face at Deontay Wilder at their face-off and Max Kellerman just shitting himself sitting there in his backwards chair.
If Chavez Jr. was a heavyweight, where do you think he would weigh in? Like, if he didn't have a weight limit? I'm thinking, like, 215.
Yeah, he'd probably be at, like, because he'd still train a little bit. He'd be like, I just ate a handful of those tortas. But I think I'm still about
train,
to train a little bit.
By train, we mean, like, floating on an inner tube down, like, the lazy river.
In, like, raging waters, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say a good 220. And he'd come in trying to bob and weave like Tyson.
Dude, first Mexican heavyweight champion.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
That's the angle that they should start doing with that guy.
You know, Puerto Rico had one with John Ruiz. You know, Cuba almost had one with, what's his name? Homeboy that Rick Bowe flattened. What's his name? Luis Gonzalez. So, yeah, Mexico need ones. Mexico, come on, let's do it. I'm rooting for that, baby.
I could see it.
Well, fuck,
maybe
I think
not
that
the,
we've
maybe
exhausted,
not the Klitschko's,
like,
but anyone
no,
else.
Definitely not Klitschko's, but pretty much anyone else.
Yeah,
anyone else at all. Well, fuck, dude, we've, like, exhausted all of our jokes and all of our recapping and previewing. Well, do you want to fucking bring it to a close?
We shot our loads worse than Adrian Broner.
Oh, Jesus. Have you watched the video? Have you watched it?
Patrick, you're damn right I watched the video.
I knew you fucking watched that video. Good man. I'm avoiding it.
And you know what, man? It's going to be a little weird. Next time I see Broner, like maybe in the Maidana fight, I might get a chubby just on muscle memory.
That's right, dude. I'm getting my.
But,
I'm getting
it was,
that
but
fucking,
it was about the chicks. It was about the chicks.
About the chicks, though, yeah. Well, I'm getting Broner Maidana. I'm getting that shit catered by Popeyes or Church's or wherever it was that he took the shit and wiped his ass with money in the bathroom in.
Popeyes.
That's what's happening. Popeyes. Cool. Sold.
Well
fucking hey, everybody.
Dude, you want to do a quick, give me just like your quick 2-minute take on the Pacquiao Rios 24/7 episode one.
I didn't get to finish it, but I watched like probably about like 80-85% of it, so that's fine. I don't know. I'm just not really that entertained by like Pacquiao the person.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I'm bored as fuck with that guy.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically at this point the 24/7s or the little backstory type of programs about Manny Pacquiao usually have to do with what it's like to be one of the hangers-on in his crew or,
the life
the problems,
of Boo Boy.
But yeah, the life of Boo Boy or the problems between he and Jinky or, shit like that. And it's just like,
hey, do you remember
hey,
when
man,
Boo Boy, like, kicked that photographer guy?
I do remember. Yeah, it was Boo Boy and somebody else. It was Boo Boy and that, like, Michael Kontz guy or however.
Oh, yeah, 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 Kontz, yeah. He looks like a reputable guy.
Oh yeah,
I've seen a lot of respectable businessmen who wear their hair like that.
Yeah, he looks really straight laced.
Yeah,
but seriously, at this point,
totally
it's like,
not taking advantage of anybody. We're not saying anything like
no,
that.
No. Super on the straight path here.
Yeah, he could be a successful Wall Street banker if he wasn't with
or a Swedish banker.
He could be. Swiss banker.
Oh, whatever, dude. It's the same thing, Swedish swish. Come on. Help me out here. Seriously,
they're
Manny
very
Pacquiao,
similar cultures. That is true.
Oh, and they're basically the same place. Manny Pacquiao and his wife, Jinky, and all of their followers, it's like John and Kate plus 8. It's like the Filipino version, and I can't stand it. It's like that Mormon family that has 27 kids.
It's kind of boring. I mean, I think the best moments of the show were definitely focused on Rios.
Yeah, he's pretty much making the promotion in terms of, you know, aside from it just, you know, being Manny Pacquiao, so people are going to watch because it's Manny Pacquiao, you know. It's in terms of, like, who's putting in the work to actually promote the fight, definitely Brandon Rios. And he's pretty funny, you know, he's a funny kid. And,
I think he's coming across more likable maybe than most people have found him to this point, you know, in these short snippets. I think the knocks on Rios, obviously, you know, making fun of Freddie Roach's Parkinson's, that wasn't cool. But I also, you know, even I didn't mind that, to be honest, because I just think, you know, he's just a dumb kid who was being stupid, obviously not very sensitive about the whole situation, but, you know.
Excuse me.
What irked me more, man, was his, like, the way he, like, hijacked the mic against Alvarado after the rematch. And I don't think he was, like, trying to be a dick about it. I think it was just his adrenaline took over. But it was really kind of a bad play. You know, it was, like, Alvarado's time to, like, speak and kind of enjoy that victory. And Rios jumped in and just started, like, screaming around, you know. And he wasn't, like, trying to be an asshole, but it came off in that way. So I don't think he had been the most, like, lovable character for most people. But I think on this episode of 24/7, there were some endearing qualities that he showed, you know, aside from his penchant for dropping F-bombs. You know, the way that he responded to that trip to the Great Wall and the way that when he was walking around New York, you know, and it was just, like, it was nice to see. I mean, I'm going to be sad when Pacquiao bludgeons him in next weekend.
Well, you know, he does in some spots kind of come off as a guy who's just happy to be there, you know, and kind of like, oh, this is a big event, and I'm just, you know, I'm happy to be part of this, you know. And in some ways, he does kind of come off like that. But I do remember a few years ago, maybe it was like a year and a half, 2 years ago, Ilie Sekpak, he, you know, of course, had like thousands of interviews and videos with Brandon Rios. There was this one where Brandon Rios was sparring, and Ilie Sekpak was, like, taking video of it. And so then, like, between rounds or between opponents or something like that, you know, Brandon Rios is standing in his corner. And so Ilie Sekpak, like, kind of, like, you know, creeps up to him, and he's like, hey, how's it going? Like, how was that? Was that pretty good? Like, how you feel? And Brandon Rios was like, what? Fuck you, bitch! Like, as loud as he possibly could in the gym. And to me, for whatever reason, that, like, just totally stuck in my head. And, like, now anytime anyone says Brandon Rios, aside from him being an exciting fighter, I think of that. And I'm just like, what a douchebag, but a lovable douchebag that's hilarious.
Well, like Liev Schreiber said, he's not, his opponent would never be, you know, called statesman-like. But, speaking of lovable douchebags, while we're on Ilie Sekpak, and I actually don't mind Sekpak. I've some of his videos, he actually gets some funny shit from some people, but I'll never forget that Showtime when he was on press row for Showbox during the Rios-Miguel Acosta fight. And through four rounds, they showed, like, the press row scoring. Do you remember that?
I don't.
We can't let this die.
I remember the fight. It was a good fight, but
yeah, and everybody had it. I mean, it was like 2-2 was the closest you could have had it. People had Acosta up 4-0 through four. They cut the press row. It's like 4-0 Acosta, 3-1 Acosta, and then Sekpak, 4-0 Rios. It was like 40-36 Rios. Anyone down? It happened. It was awesome. He's never been done that again. So. Might have been a slight conflict of there with, you know, in terms of his objectivity. But I actually enjoy him, man. I thought he did a great video with, like, NBA players where he was asking them predictions for the Mayweather-Canelo fight. And there was just some hilarious shit there. Not so much in terms of, like, what they were saying, but just, like, how some of these guys responded to Ilie Sekpak, like, just to his presence, because he kind of just hangs around and rolls around with that digital video. And, like, Steven Jackson was just hammering him. It was hilarious.
Well, you know, he seems like one of those guys, and I don't really want to spend a whole lot of time, you know, talking about my colleagues, really, but
yeah, he does. Honestly, like there's plenty of people who contribute far less worthy stuff than what he does.
Oh, definitely. He seems to be one of those types of guys that you either really like what he does, and you're like, oh my god, you're just, oh, next to these fighters, and blah blah blah, blah, or you just fucking hate him. Me, I don't really care either way. Like, he doesn't really bother me because I know that he's like. I'm sorry, but he's essentially like a joke. You know, I mean, if you look at what he does and who he covers and how he does it, the types of questions that he asks, it's like, it's funny. It's not serious. I mean, at least not to me. So, I don't know. I can't
he has a shtick, you know. He's not really like a hard-hitting journalist, but he does have some good access
to people. Although
he does work hard. Yeah, he
works hard, and he gets a lot of videos and all that type of stuff. And if people are into that, good, you know, dig it up.
I used to catch him like years ago doing like stuff with the Lakers. Like, he would always have like videos of him and Kobe and Shaq, and those guys would rip on him. You know, and he was kind of this strange foreigner. I think he's from Israel, and he would, you know, come in there and ask them these kind of goofy questions in his accent. But occasionally, you know, it provided some humorous material. So, you know, the man's doing his thing. We got to respect that. But, and hey, Showtime's had worse, you know, employees. Joe Cortez, Chuck Ciampa. The setback 40-36 Rios was not the low point for Showtime, you know, affiliated commentators.
Yeah, probably not. And at least he wasn't, you know. Yeah, at least he wasn't, you know, bragging about stealing somebody's side piece or something like that.
He kept it classy.
Yeah, he kept it very classy, just not with the scoring.
That left something to be desired.
Oh. Yeah, a little bit. That was a good fight, though. I remember. That was a good fight.
That was actually
a
damn good fight.
That's kind of stupid to kind of, like, you know, score them all for Rios, because that kind of takes away from why it was a good fight. It was a good fight because he was wobbled and he was losing rounds.
Yeah, his Mayweather Canelo card was kind of weird too. He had James Toney winning.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Wasn't he the one who got in there and like sparred with James Toney or something like that? Like, James Toney threw punches at him for like 20 seconds and then he ran away or something. Anyway, fucking boxing gossip.
Not sure, but I will check that out as soon as I'm done wanking it to the Broner video one more time.
Yeah, well, no, you're going to be wanking it to your power or to Nonito Donaire's power first.
All of the above.
Yeah, all at the same time. Well, let's wrap this shit up, Foley. Let's get the hell out of here.
All right, man. Can you take us off, though? You do it so much more gracefully.
I'll try to do it here.
I'm sorry.
Well, it's okay. Everybody who listened, thank you so much. A little bit of bullshit there for the last 20 minutes, but why not? Because we can. And thanks again for listening. We'll be back next week. I'm Patrick Connor from QueensburyRules.com. Check out my stuff and check out James Foley from BattleOfTok.com stuff. And we'll see you soon. Take it easy.